Maine Public's president and CEO. Public radio and television always aim to provide quality, in-depth programs for everyone, but these past few weeks have really magnified that mission. I'm Jennifer Rooks, from our news coverage to carrying the daily CDC briefings, tiny screen concerts, and free over-the-air television classrooms. Maine Public is striving to offer creative and meaningful ways to connect, inform, and yes, even entertain the people of Maine during these unprecedented times. At the helm of Maine Public is our president and CEO, Mark Vogelzang. He's guiding the station through these challenging times, and today, Mark joins us to discuss all of the changes underway. It's also your chance to ask him questions about our services or offer suggestions for the future. Mark Vogelzang on Maine Calling, next. But first, this news update. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Today, we're going to check in with Mark Vogelzang, the president and CEO of Maine Public, to discuss how the COVID-19 crisis is affecting public radio and television. Mark joined Maine Public back in January of 2012. Hi, Mark. Nice to hear your voice.
Hi, Jennifer. Nice to be with you on Maine Calling. This is terrific and a good opportunity to talk with you and catch up.
That's right. And this is for you and the audience. So what questions do you have about Maine Public, either TV, classical or news radio stations, our website, events? You can send an email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Mark, you know, I think we've all learned at Maine Public in these last few weeks what an extraordinary tech department we have. I saw only the tip of the iceberg when they helped me set up this home studio that I'm broadcasting from. But I don't have a sense of what's been going on stationwide. Tell me how the entire organization has transformed in the last month and a half.
Well, it has. Soon after we all decided, based on the information from the scientists and the medical community and what the recommendations were, we moved into, like many, many organizations and nonprofits, we moved into a work-from-home position, and somewhere around 80-plus of our staff are working all across the state at all their different locations. And you were the most visible person, because even though you're on the radio, you've been doing this show remotely from your home for what, 6 weeks or so, Jen?
I think so, 6 or 7, yeah.
And the point is, it should be seamless. Our services on radio, television, and online should be very much behind the scenes. And I will agree with you, Jen. A big shout out to our Maine Public technicians, our technical folks, our IT people, our transmission folks who make it all work seamlessly behind the scenes.
That's right. We already knew they were amazing, but it's just one thing after another. Even after I started on air with one setup, they determined that they could make it sound even better and delivered some more equipment to outside of my door. So I've heard a lot of people say that I sound like I'm in a studio, which is just amazing to me. And I know that the reporters have been reporting in different ways. When they go out in the field, they now have a long boom microphone and are wearing a mask. Just some of the ways that we've changed.
Well, that's right. The amount of work that goes into remote work for any company understands that. Whether your program, this program, reporters in the field, they've got protective gear, they've got more costly connection equipment, which is something normally we'd call in or just go back to the office, to the studios, but we're filing our stories remotely. And I will remind folks that the news department is working on another deep dive, this one, of course, naturally on the pandemic, on coronavirus. And so you heard last night, you heard this morning, our news director, Mark Simpson, talking with Nora Flaherty. So we're working to find, report on the information so that you as a listener at home can find out what's happening. And again, a place that has independent and reliable journalism. So last night's, yesterday's show that you did, Jennifer, with Ed Liu of Jackson Laboratory, a brilliant scientist right here in Maine, and Herb Cushing, another fantastic doctor at Spectrum, sharing what they know about our list about the pandemic and the virus and what we don't know. So that was terrific.
Maine Public has been carrying the CDC briefings on television, radio, and on the internet. Anybody who is a viewer or listener already knows that. What they may not know is that Maine Public is the pool camera for that, and the reason everybody else in the state is able to carry it is because of Nick Woodward and Nick Godfrey in our television department. I'm wondering, these are happening every day, Mark. As long as they're happening, will we continue to cover them, or is it some point at which we'll say, you know what, we're not going to cover these anymore?
No, this is really important, and it's an important fact of the team that's been able to do this. And what we've just added, with your support, we've been able to put a remote control camera in the CDC briefing area, which is physically in Augusta at the Maine Emergency Management Agency. And so the governor today can do a press conference, Dr. Shaw can do his, and we can do it seamlessly and provide that for every other news organization in the state, audio and visual. And early on, our chief technology officer, Jeff Mahaney, said, let's be the pool feed if we can. Let's do the camera from the CDC and from MEMA, and that was the go-to place. So we're really happy that we were able to do that.
My perspective, of course, is the news and public affairs, but I'm aware of some of the other things that are going on all around the station. Mark, tell us about the learning space, the initiative, the idea for it, the genesis for that, and how it's working.
It was very interesting, and this had a lot to do with my connections and talking to colleagues around the country. As you know, education has been front and center in our history at Maine Public Television and at PBS for many years. The pre-K through kindergarten, early childhood programming that we have on all day. But last week we launched this new show called The Learning Space, and it's for grade school kids learning at home. So every day for an hour, Maine teachers presenting lessons specifically for third, fourth, and fifth graders. We're only doing a half an hour this week every day, but here's an interesting fact. Over 170,000 school-age kids are at home right now, and some 30,000 of those don't have access to broadband internet. So I thought in conversations with the team here, we could use and offer up our large TV station, TVs that everyone has in their home, whether they have internet or not, and it's always free over the air. And we could connect those kids in a very formative time, third grader, fourth grader, fifth graders, access to a daily consistent session with a teacher of the year. The teachers have been the amazing heroes here because they've stepped forward, created lesson plans. I just watched a teacher reading to third and fourth graders today, and that's amazing. So we're going to continue that all the way through June.
It's really taking us back to our roots, isn't it? Because Maine Public Television began as educational television.
That's right. That's right. And I would say those roots in education are consistent with our values and our mission of connecting Maine, providing quality information and journalism to our entire region on television, radio, and online. And I would say kudos again, this theme of our team that put it together. We were able to launch a brand new program on television in just 3 weeks. So that was fun to see it happen.
And I know that this is our own program. This is locally produced, but on the World Channel, there's all sorts of educational programming for adults as well as children, correct?
There are. And we've pivoted during this time, Jen, because we know that people are spending more time at home. They're interested in finding interesting things to learn and have history about. But also, we've said we should put more content on our television channels that a broader range of viewers can enjoy, specifically families, maybe high school kids and college kids, things that we can all enjoy and learn from. So that's on our World Channel, which is also over the air and on cable. And on the digital side, we've been doing some things with music that's been really remarkable, too. So I'll talk about that in a minute, but I totally agree with you. As Maine's PBS station, the News Hour with Judy Woodruff and her colleagues, I think the number of households tuning into Maine public television is somewhere near or over 400,000 households a week, which is astonishing.
We're speaking with our CEO, Mark Vogelzang. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email, question, or comment to Mark at talk@mainepublic.org. Make it brief, please. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Mark, we were gearing up for a summer of great community events, especially around the Maine Bicentennial. All of those are on hold. What, if anything, is Maine Public able to do in lieu of gathering people together to celebrate?
Well, it is a shame, and everybody's feeling a sense of loss, I think, as we look toward a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel where we can start connecting. But in the meantime, we're using our digital services. Everyone knows Zoom. So we've started an effort to, you know, the NPR show Tiny Desk. Well, we're doing something called Tiny Screen Concerts, where we're putting Maine performers on for a short half hour noontime Zoom concert. And I know you don't think of Zoom as a concert vehicle, but if you have to sign up, you have to sign up from the website, mainepublic.org. And I've been interested to see that so many people are connecting musicians with an audience who may not know about their work as professional performers. So we just had a Baroque flutist on, a classically trained flutist and singer. She was on just today. We've had folk music singers. We've had guitarists. We've had jazz pianists. It's been really wonderful. It's called Tiny Screen Concerts. And that's one way of doing that. The other thing that we're doing is with our museum program, and that's been where we've actually done virtual tours of many of our colleagues who are in the nonprofit world who run museums in Maine. So people can have a quick peek, if you will, or visit a museum virtually, and doing that online. And you can also find that at our Maine Public website. So it's fun to see the different ways in which our team is doing, reaching out and connecting organizations and individuals.
Next week, we have a membership drive. It's not going to be our usual membership drive. Tell us about it.
No, it'll be a Pledge from Home membership drive on radio. That begins on the classical station. We'll do that on Monday, and then on Maine Public Radio, our news service, starting on Tuesday the 12th. Everyone's going to be remote. We, of course, have to have some people in the studios, but that's been operating that way for a lot of this time. And I've noticed that other stations around the country, NPR stations and in the region, have been seeing some success in fundraising, because I think, Jennifer, people are listening more. Even though our own schedules are different, and we're not necessarily our patterns of our life are not necessarily the same during work time, but there is a desire and a hunger to listen to radio and live streaming and podcasting. So, what I'm hearing is Seattle just did a $1 million one day pledge drive. That was remarkable. Our colleagues in Boston. New Hampshire Public Radio has done, they did well. I think we can beat New Hampshire, frankly. I don't want to put up a little competition here, but I think we can do as good or better than New Hampshire with our supporters.
Well, let me ask you about public broadcasting generally and sort of in a more broad way. It's been widely reported that National Public Radio, NPR, is expected to lose something like $40 to $53 million over the next fiscal year. Already pay cuts throughout that organization. This has been reported in the New York Times and Bloomberg. It's a frightening time. And I know that public broadcasting, I've been doing this long enough, Mark, to know that there are sort of, it's a little bit of this roller coaster ride of when things are a little bit scary. How are you feeling right now? Are you worried about the future?
Well, I'm always optimistic. I've been doing it as well, like you, for many, many years in this business. And, you know, our listeners, our supporters, our TV viewers are very supportive. I will say this, even though no one has a crystal ball about what the economy is going to look like or what the pandemic will do, but we have been very focused on looking ahead at this. We have always relied on, as the most reliable and steady source of support for Maine Public Broadcasting has been our viewers and listeners. And that's not going to change. You know, our job is, my job, the board of directors, our leadership team, is to very carefully monitor expense and income. And I think we're going to be okay. It may be, as you said, a little bit of a roller coaster ride, Jen, but we've got, I think, the best listeners in the country, frankly, per capita, more than most. And I also think that our folks are very committed to our service. And that's ultimately what's going to happen. We're working hard to make sure that we can be responsible as we go forward, not only this year, but into the future.
I understand all of this happened as we were about to launch a brand new website. It's not the best time to be trying to figure out everything at once, I know, but tell me about that. What can the people who go to Maine Public's website expect to see in the near future? How it will differ from what we do right now?
Well, initially and right off, we're just making the transition. So anyone who's been through a CMS background change is that it's just the same data with a new different back end and the same forward-looking face. But eventually it will give us much more flexibility in offering more content, better options for graphics, better options for television work, better options for digital content that's specific to the website. So that's good. And I will say one little hint, Jen, is we are thinking, I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but we are exploring the idea of a virtual high school graduation for Maine Public Television in June. So wouldn't that be fun? You want to be the commencement speaker, Jen?
I think you could probably find someone more interesting than I am, but thanks for the compliment. We are speaking with Maine Public CEO and President Mark Vogelzang. What are your questions for him about not only what we've been doing now through this pandemic coverage and how we've been adjusting our programming to serve you, but also about the future of Maine Public? And what are your ideas? As a listener, we're always wanting to know what listeners and viewers think, because this is community television and community radio. So give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling, with help from Jane and Frank Bragg of Bangor, proud supporters of the voices of independent and in-depth journalism at Maine Public News, and New England Rehabilitation Hospital of Portland, helping patients and their families after illness or injury. Learn more at nerhp.org.
You know the voices from your favorite NPR shows, but behind those voices are dozens of producers, editors, technicians, and engineers working around the clock to bring you the news and the stories that are timely, informative, and insightful.
Hi, I'm Devin Meller, and I'm the operations manager for NPR's New York Bureau.
My name is Katie Monteleone, and I'm a production assistant for the TED Radio Hour.
Hi there, my name's Alex, and I'm a software engineer working on NPR.org.
This is Gianna Capodona, the house manager of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me here in Chicago.
I'm Patrick Murray, and I'm an audio engineer at NPR West.
I'm Lily Quiros, and I'm a producer for Morning Edition.
Hey, I'm Casey Morrell, the director of NPR's All Things Considered.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so very much.
I just want to say thank you so much for your support.
Thank you for making what we do possible. We literally could not do it without your support.
And you can pledge your support right now at mainepublic.org.
The novel coronavirus is testing our resilience in unprecedented ways, affecting all aspects of Maine life. Join Maine Public this week for Deep Dive Coronavirus, conversations with our news team that trace the outbreak in our state from its source through the present and looking ahead to the future. We'll talk about the state's response to the virus and its impact on our education system and the economy. And on Thursday at 1, tune in to Maine Calling for an America Amplified call-in special looking at the coming tourist season in New England. That's this week on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Mark Vogelzang, Maine Public's president and CEO, is our guest. We're talking about public broadcasting now and in the future. Join our conversation by email to talk at mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post to the Maine Calling Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. And we'll start by going to Kitsy, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Kitsy. Go ahead.
Hi, Janet. Hi, Mark.
Hello.
I think I have an answer to my question already, but I was urged to ask it anyway. I had wondered what happened to Robin Rylette, and I was assured that she has not gone away, that the technology, I gather, is being worked out for her to be able to come back on. If that's the right answer, you don't need to answer that. But I also wanted to
say
that many years ago, I decided to put 10% of whatever is left of my estate to Maine Public, and I just urge other people to do that. I am an Evergreen member, and I just wrote a little love letter to NPR, to Public Maine Public Broadcasting, just saying I could not survive without you. Between classical and Maine Public Radio, it's on almost all day with a couple of exceptions, and I thank you for saving my sanity and keeping me learning. This is my continuing ed. Love you. Bye-bye. Oh,
thank you. That is that's wonderful, isn't it, Jennifer?
It is. Thank you so much, Kitsy, and keep calling.
I can say a little bit about the role of music, maybe. This is an important thing to say, is that we offer, of course, a full-time classical station. Robin Rylette's our morning host, and of course, she's getting set up to work from home just like you are, and that's a little more involved when you're playing music remotely. But our jazz, our in-tune show, all of those streaming. The fact is, music that we offer, and everybody right now, can give us a sense of respite from the stress we feel, as well as some calm. And I know this personally with a sense of companionship when we're alone, having the radio on or streaming. So we think that's an important factor in balancing out the sort of daily diet of difficult news sometimes, to have a place where you can find a little respite and calm. So Kitsy was really great.
Right. And to the connecting this to what we were talking about before, we didn't mention the Symphony Sunday, which is giving a platform to our two biggest symphony orchestras all the way through September.
Yeah, and our full-time classical station that's heard on 7 frequencies around the state and streamed. The fact is, our partners at these organizations have been challenged because their concert series has been essentially canceled for this season, and that's a difficult financial thing, but it's also professionally very difficult not to hear the music. So we worked with the Bangor Symphony and the Portland Symphony to allow us to broadcast some of these great concerts that we have in the back, on our archives and in their archives. They're really their programming, and it's been wonderful to hear on Sunday afternoons. I listened this past Sunday to to the Portland Symphony, and it was terrific.
Kitsy, thanks so much for your call. I'm going to go to an email from Catherine. As a longtime listener of Maine Public, I'm so disappointed that I and the people of Maine no longer have Maine Things Considered as a valuable and trusted news source of local programming. Can you discuss your reasons for this change? And might you consider reviving it now during the pandemic when we all need more news and information about our great state? It would be another way to keep us all connected and informed.
Right. That's a very good point, that more news is essential right now. So what we're doing is actually adding, we haven't declined or dropped news from our schedule. In fact, we're doing deeper reporting than we ever have. The challenge that we had with Maine Things Considered being every day at 5:30, a full half hour, was that not everybody could listen at that time for a full length of time. So instead, we're putting our stories throughout the day. You're hearing it in Morning Edition, All Things Considered at different times of the afternoon, and also during the noon hour when we've got Here and Now. So we're doing local newscasts and content there. So I know it's different and it's changed for some people, but in this case, a change has allowed us to do allowed us to have the ability to do more and send our reporters on longer, deeper reporting stories. So that's good.
All right.
Good feedback, though. Thank you.
We'll go to Ellery, There we go. Ellery in Waterville. Hi, Ellery. Go ahead.
Hello, and thank you for taking my call. Mr. Vogelzang, hello.
Hi.
Quick comment. I thank you very much for your saying that we have the best listeners. I wholeheartedly concur. The questions folks ask, incredible. Comment. Certain politicians, I won't name names, seem to leave me with a feeling that almost every word out of their mouth must be meant to obfuscate, distract, outright errors. So I was wondering if the Maine's public services have something, perhaps behind the scenes, some perhaps independent oversight, fact-checking, something to maintain the integrity of the services that we have in Maine. I was wondering if there's anything to that effect that you know of.
If you're talking about daily briefings that we've been seeing for the last several months from the White House, that was a shift, and we and NPR and all the news departments across the country have been working hard to say what's the appropriate role for live coverage when there's a breaking news story or something of newsworthiness is going to be presented, and also to provide analysis and context for those comments. So that's been the challenge. So we are doing probably fewer press conferences right now, live sort of just regular press conferences from the White House. We are stepping up and doing the briefings that the CDC is doing and also the governor's press conferences. Those are done live on television and radio. I hope that answers your question, Ellery.
Ellery, thanks for calling in. We will go to Larry calling from Bangor. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Hey, go ahead.
I'm about to annoy you. I don't understand the constant need for more and more and more money. In other words, I'm an Evergreen member. Until I'm dead, I will continue to be an Evergreen member. Every once in a while, I increase my amount as I can. So I don't understand. We've got all these Evergreen people. Before I was an Evergreen person, I joined every year, and I used to get a little gifty, and I don't get a gifty anymore. But you're saving on the gifty cost. I don't understand the constant
Sure, Larry, thanks. Yeah, so I think that's a question a lot of people have. It may feel as though we're always asking for money. You know, we're not cutting in with commercials three times or four times a half hour, but, you know, four times a year having a pledge drive. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, the membership drive and fundraisers are always a challenge for how to balance that. And the fact is, people come in and go. You're a regular. And, Larry, you're there all the time. You always will be. You said, you know, you do this, whether come rain or shine, you're doing this all the time and have been for a long time. But there's a lot of people, and probably 20, 30% of our audience supports us financially. But there's a large group of folks who listen regularly, appreciate it, but won't take the step to make a pledge drive, to make a gift and support us. So we are an independent nonprofit, so we don't have any sort of large organization behind us. Like, we're not owned by the state of Maine. We're not owned by the university or Colby Bates or Bowdoin. So we've got to do it ourselves. And it's a way of just making sure we can keep things running well and have the professional staff that we do.
Larry, thanks for your question.
Yeah.
We're going to go to Adam. Adam sent a tweet. My parents live in Portage in Aroostook County, and ever since MPBN switched to digital, they've had difficulties picking up Channel 10 out of Presque Isle. Are there plans to upgrade the signal strength in that area like what's being done down south?
We have not been able to upgrade our signal on our television station from Mars Hill in Presque Isle. And Portage is probably just down the river, so the signal does not get there as well. So that's a difficult one. I can ask if you'll give us your name and your phone number. I can ask our chief technology officer, Jeff Mahaney, to give you a call and see if we can. I know he has family in the area. He knows that transmitter site very, very well, and we might be able to figure out a solution for you for television reception.
Adam, thank you for your tweet. We'll go to Catherine calling from Brunswick. Hi, Catherine. Go ahead.
Hi, folks. I'm calling about fundraising. It seems to me that I have fundraising for television, and then we have fundraising for radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm torn at times. You know, who should I donate to? How often is this, you know, the fundraising going to take place? That's really the essence of my question, concern.
Yeah. So the question of where you can or should give your support to, because you use both services, is really your choice. We have categories of membership and support for radio. We have categories of support for just television and also for both, people who support both services. As far as how often, we want to be just as efficient as possible. So over the years, we've kept paring back and been very, we try to be as efficient as we can on television and radio. So we do short bursts of fundraising during the year. We do less than the average PBS station. And our radio fundraising, I think, is second to none when it comes to efficiency as well. We're starting that next week, of course, so maybe that's what's on everyone's mind. But I hope that helps the answer.
Sure. Catherine, thanks for calling in, and thanks for being both a listener and a viewer. We have a post from John in Facebook. As a listener in Augusta, I am all too familiar with the difficulties you have in getting a good signal to the state's principal communities. Two questions. One, are you any closer to finding a frequency in the capital area, at least for a translator of your main channel? And two, much of the time with a rooftop antenna, I can pick up the digital signal from WMEW Waterville. May I suggest you add an HD3 subchannel to broadcast Sarah Willis's Intune Stream, which is already available on your website. I believe your listeners statewide would welcome this. John is more technologically savvy, I think, than your average bear. Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, that's a great idea, to use HD3 as a way to put more channels on WMEW. Augusta has always been, I think, historically a challenge because our radio signals have not been there. We do have a transmitter in between Waterville and Augusta, and that is one way of getting it. And I think the other way of doing it is, I know this may seem more technology than you might want to have in your home, but smart speakers are really wonderful to be able to specifically call up one of the radio channels and it's streamed immediately, and you don't have to worry about over-the-air signal. That's one way of thinking about it. But I will check and see if there's anything. We do not have a frequency, if you will, in Augusta that's going to probably solve your problem right now.
All right. Well, thanks so much for that question. Let's move on to Sandy, who is calling from Rome. Hi, Sandy. Go ahead.
Hey, Jen. How are you?
Good.
My question is really simple. I used to love when Jen did Maine Watch. I love listening to her now, but I would love to see it back on television again. Is there any chance of that happening?
Jen can answer that question. She's pretty busy doing Maine Calling. But I hear what you're saying about Maine Watch, and it's a program that's been has a real history here at Maine Public. But that was ended probably 5-8 years ago. So it's always something we could consider. So thanks. That's good feedback, Sandy. Are you in the Belgrade Lakes there? Are you on Long Lake? Is that what I am hearing from being in Rome?
I'm on Great Pond.
Great Pond. Okay. Well, listen for those loons. That's wonderful up there.
Thank you, Sandy, and thank you for the compliment. Ed on Facebook says, is there a reason why Maine Public Radio insists on pushing sponsorship ads each time a member's phone has a brief service interruption? While trying to follow WMEA on cell phone, frequently the ads come again and again and again. It's infuriating. Can't we make a sponsor-free link available to us Evergreen Friend members? That's interesting.
It is.
Maine does not have great cell service, so it's restarting the stream every time he loses service.
Right, and that's a technical issue. Let me get, if we can get your information, Ed, that would be terrific, and we'll have someone call you about it. But the idea of having a pledge-free stream for Evergreen members is something that we have thought about. We haven't done that, but that would be an interesting way. Many people do like the sense of community that a fundraiser has, and I think this one coming up will be very different, so I do hope you'll tune in, even if you are a member already, a supporting member. We're calling it our Pledge from Home, and I didn't know this, Jennifer, but evidently Needlepoint is cool again. Did you know that? That's why there's a Needlepoint logo on our website that talks about the pledge drive. Sorry about that.
All right. Well, in case you don't recognize his voice, we're talking with Mark Vogelzang, the president and CEO of Maine Public. He's here to take your questions. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. That's O-R-G. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from AltE Store, providing solar power, battery backup equipment, and advice to solar installers and DIYers since 1999. AltE Store. On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
On May 6, 1964, Martin Luther King Jr. spoke at Bowdoin College. Bowdoin's Political Forum, a nonpartisan student organization, brought Dr. King to the college as part of the group's effort to invite black civil rights leaders to campus to inspire students to action. Forum leader Frederick Stoddard and Bowdoin president James Stacy Coles introduced Reverend King to an overflow crowd of about 1,100 people at First Parish Church. Dr. King spoke to the attendees for over an hour.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Bernstein Scher and Maine Masons, celebrating their bicentennial in Maine. Happy birthday, Maine! The Daily Maine CDC briefing on the coronavirus is scheduled to take place at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Governor Mills is expected to join Dr. Shaw at today's briefing. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page will all bring it to you live. In addition, each day's address is archived at MainePublic.org for later on-demand viewing or listening. Just choose the television drop-down. Again, Maine's CDC briefing with Dr. Shaw and Governor Mills at 2 o'clock this afternoon and carried here on Maine Public Radio, as well as Maine Public Television, MainePublic.org, and the Maine Public Facebook page.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Maine Public's CEO and President Mark Vogelzang is with me, and we want to hear your thoughts about how our various broadcast channels are covering the crisis, what questions you have about TV, radio, and web services. You can join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Be quick with that. We're getting close to the end of the program. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. We'll go to Greg calling from Kennebunk. Hi, Greg. Go ahead.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. I just want you to know that I'm a long time NPR supporter. I used to live in Albany. I was a volunteer at WAMC. Then I was a supporter of WFCR in Amherst. I came to Maine about 10 years ago. About 6 months ago, I donated my 2002 Subaru to your station.
However, fantastic.
I have become very, very concerned about the fact that there is no more objective news on NPR. I call it now not National Public Radio. I call it National Partisan Radio.
Give us an example. When I listen to Morning Edition, All Things Considered, I'm listening to both political parties. What do you mean specifically?
Steve Inskeep, Mary Louise Kelly, they're all Dick Folkenflik, Jack Beatty. They all wear the same uniform. There's never two sides of the news presented. It's like NPR is an arm of the Democratic Party.
Yeah. Well, that's helpful to hear that. I will certainly pass it along to our team at the National folks, and we're working very hard to try to get a balanced coverage and thought from both sides of the aisle politically. So I'm sorry that it's not working for you right now. These conversations are going to continue. But I hear you, and if you're concerned about being objective, we want to make sure we're as objective as we possibly can.
Greg, thanks for your call. We're going to move on to Ray. Ray's calling from Bucksfield. Hi, Ray. Go ahead.
Hi, Jen. I was just calling because I recently moved to Maine from New Hampshire a few months ago, and New Hampshire Public Radio has been putting out some amazing podcasts, such as Stranglehold about the New Hampshire primary.
Yes.
I don't know if there's any plans that Maine Public has to be producing any podcasts in the near future.
Well, we don't have any podcasts that are specifically like you mentioned, but that's a great example of a real emphasis that our colleagues at New Hampshire have been doing for some time. We do have a number of podcasts, and many of them have to do with the programs that we already carry. For instance, Maine Calling is a podcast. We did the Political Pulse, which is right now. We've held that up, but that's going to probably come back as soon as we possibly can. We've added this Deep Dive. Those are podcasts. So there will be more that you'll be hearing from. But is there any particular thing that you'd like to hear on Maine Calling that we are Maine Public that we should be covering, Ray, with a podcast?
I don't know of anything specifically. Generally, the excitement that I was able to get from the programs that New Hampshire Public Radio was putting out was based upon the fact that it was stuff that I hadn't thought of thinking of before. I'd just like to see, some more edifying stuff that I can listen to, on my own time when I feel like it.
And we do have something that we do each week. We put out a list of podcast shortlists. So that's a curated list of podcasts from Maine that you should check out on our website. It's called Podcast Shortlist, and we have a email that goes out each week with those podcasts in it. That may be something that you want to check out, and they include many of ours and our partners at NPR and elsewhere, PBS and Marketplace, for instance.
Ray, thanks for your call. Yeah, and welcome to Maine. We'll move on. We'll go to Kevin, who's calling from Auburn. Hi, Kevin. Go ahead.
No, hi there.
Hi, Kevin.
I'm a pretty much a flat-out fan. But from the point of view of the nonprofit world, because I work with nonprofits and I'm part of a nonprofit, I can't believe how much you have gotten done in the last 5 years. You know, someone was calling and saying, where does the money go? I don't know how you can get so much done with the money you get. You split programming. These are huge projects. I'm totally bowled over by what you have managed to get done.
Well, that's nice to hear. We are working hard all the time. I know every one of our great colleagues at Maine Public, and it's a fairly small staff, less than 100 employees that we have here do all this, and we cover the entire state on television and radio. So we're trying to add more services as we go along, and it's always a tension between how much we have to keep doing what we're currently doing and then adding more services. But thanks for recognizing that. That's very nice, Kevin.
Yes, Kevin, thank you so much. Facebook post from Kat. She writes, I always feel guilty during your fundraisers. I have limited discretionary income and prefer to donate to causes that can mean the difference between life or death for people and animals, food pantries, that kind of thing. I almost feel like I'm stealing by listening without donating. And I'm Kat, thank you for having the honesty to write that, because, Mark, we don't want people to feel this way.
No, of course not. And as I said earlier, we understand people are in all sorts of different circumstances. And that's the great thing about public broadcasting. It's available for everyone. It's here. We ask for voluntary support from people who want to support it. If you can't or don't or feel you need to give your support for elsewhere, or if you're on limited income, of course, that's what it's here for. It's free. It's over the air. We love our supporters. We love our friends. We love our listeners and viewers. So it all works well together. It's a uniquely American model. It's not government funded. It's listener community funded, and everybody's part of it, whether you're contributing a lot or just listening. It all works.
Janet on Facebook writes, looking forward to joining as a new resident. Thank you so much for your complete, factual, and unbiased coverage.
Oh, nice.
Keep up the great week. Carla on Facebook says, we dropped our cable and use an antenna, but we can't receive any PBS stations here in Washington County. Can anything be done? I miss my Create TV.
Oh, yeah. We should be able to reach you in Washington County. We do have a television station, of course, in Calais, and it's on a very tall tower, a very, very strong digital television signal. So let us get a hold of you, Janet. If you could reach us at our audience services number, and I don't have that right, or if just write to Maine Calling, give us your information, and we'll have someone call you, probably Jeff Mahaney again, our ready, steady guy who knows all about TV reception.
We'll go to Deborah calling from South Portland. Hi, Deborah. Go ahead.
Hi, Jen. I just wanted to comment again, sorry, on the fundraising. I've been a member forever, and life without Maine Public Radio does not bear thinking about. So I thought maybe when you're doing the fundraising things, you could emphasize that what you're really looking for is new members. And I know you kind of do that, but obviously someone who called in before felt like it was addressed to him. Or what I do, as I'm already an Evergreen member, I send a small gift each time the fundraising is going on. Not a lot, just we give as much as we can each month. But I send a small amount every month. It makes me feel better, and I know that life in Maine without Maine Public Radio would not be as it is now.
Mm. That's great, and I like the idea of continuing to focus on new members. That's why we've focused on our Giving Tuesday effort and our Pledge from Home. So it's always nice to be able to give people an opportunity to think about the value of the service, whether that's new members or like you are, Deborah. It's wonderful to be in a longtime Evergreen friend. Thank you so much for that and the extra giving you do. So we appreciate that. That's wonderful.
Thank you, Deborah. An email from Lucy. I really miss Dan Damon and World Update on BBC that we used to count on in the 5 to 6 hour on weekdays.
Yeah.
What plans do you have, if any, for replacing the global perspective in that hour? I gather Dan is on The Real Story, but not sure when that might air. Thank you for the great programming. Oh, you put on with Maine Calling. Oh, thank you, Lucy. Go ahead.
The BBC World Update was on radio at 5 a.m., and that was Dan Damon, if you didn't know about that. What happened is the BBC, because of the World Update, that was the name of the program, they really wanted to reorganize to cover COVID-19 and the pandemic and some staffing concerns. So we listened to it for a while, the show they replaced it with, but the first hour of Morning Edition is available at 5 a.m., and it provides that same news and analysis. So we still offer BBC News Hour at 9 in the morning and at 4 p.m. on weekends, and then overnights from midnight to 5 a.m. But I agree with you. I miss the BBC at 5 a.m., and I had a chance to meet Dan Damon, wonderful individual. And I think it's one of those casualties of the changing situation with the pandemic.
Laura on Facebook writes, I'm a lifelong devotee of public radio and television and an Evergreen member. Can Mark tell us what happened to Nightly Business Report? I really miss it.
Yeah, Nightly Business Report on television was on at 6:30 on a regular time period, and it was based out of Miami. They had some challenges with funding, and they were then purchased by a branch of CNBC, and when revenues declined there, they just couldn't make it work. So that program was stopped pretty abruptly, which is why we revamped our schedule. We put Judy Woodruff and PBS NewsHour at 6 p.m. on television, and then also we kept the original hour at 7 p.m. with Judy and her correspondent. So we're doubling up, if you will, on NewsHour, but folks are responding and feeling very good about the fact that PBS has, you know, they can catch PBS in the early evening, no matter what time their dinner hour is.
An email from Jay. As a former board operator at Maine Public, I salute my former colleagues for their fine work and their abilities to quickly adapt to new tech strategies. A question for Mark. Do you know how many other public radio stations are doing daily coverage with their own CDC and governors?
No, I don't, Jay. But hello, and nice to hear from you. I don't know that number, but it is... I think we have a unique ability because an advantage, if you will, because there's both statewide public television and our statewide public radio. So the fact that we were able to mobilize kind of both sides of the house to make this work with the CDC, we've had a long history of connecting, doing emergency broadcast connections with our friends at MEMA, the state management emergency management agency. So it was a natural when they decided to do the briefings from the MEMA headquarters in Augusta for us to be able to broadcast there live. But no, I'm very proud and happy that we were able to make that work and that the CDC is being carried statewide. Those briefings are being carried statewide on all the radio and television stations and newspapers because of the work that Maine Public has been able to do.
I'll try to read an email from John quickly because we're tight on time. Can you comment on how weather reports are standardized? I love Lou McNally's reports in the morning. Very thorough. However, sometimes during the day, it's quite brief. In the winter, I've been amazed when there's a forecast of the evening weather, but no mention of a huge storm that's coming in the morning. Ooh. Years ago, I listened to a forecast on Vermont Public Radio, and wow, that was thorough. Thanks. I love Maine Public, a proud Evergreen member.
Oh, that's great. John, I agree with you. Weather is one of those topics that we can talk about endlessly, and everybody's got an opinion about the weather forecasts that we offer. So we are constantly evaluating it. It makes good sense. I spent 16 years at Vermont Public Radio, so I know the eye in the sky weather forecast folks very, very well. But please send me an email. I'd love to engage with you. My email address is mvogelzang@mainpublic.org. And Jen, this has been really fun to be able to talk with you today on the show.
Thanks for joining us, Mark. And that was Mark Vogelzang, my boss, president and CEO of Maine Public.
Lucy, see you next week on the radio, Jen.
That's right. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. This will be rebroadcast at 7. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Stay with us coming up in a few minutes here on Maine Public Radio, the latest update from Governor Janet Mills and CDC Director Nirav Shah. You can also watch the briefing on Maine Public Television or at the Maine Public website. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.